Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 805, May the 11th, 1987. Last week, when we shared this time together, Major General Richard Secord was about to testify before the House and Senate regarding the Iran-Contra affair. The testimony on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this past week was very dramatic, and of course, it was very important to me personally, as I stated with you on World Watchers, because I had fingered Stanford Technology as being the belly of the beast, the controlling arrangement for this huge, vast, referred to as the Odessa. And it was very interesting and no coincidence at all that Secord and Hakim, coming out of Otto von Bolschwing's TCI, that became IIS and then Stanford Technology, that they would be caught doing what they were doing. People around that operation should have been tied up a long time ago. When The Realist came out in 1972, my article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?, I wrote within 3 weeks of the arrest at Watergate Hotel, it was published and available, printed 3 to 4 weeks later, that two governments existed side by side and that an investigation of those people at the Watergate Hotel would reveal this secret operation that has been going on since World War II. Now, the San Jose Mercury had a long article this week concerning the testimony of General Secord, and it's titled, Secord is Attacked for Managing a Private CIA. Now, it's no coincidence that Reinhard Gehlen came from Germany to set up our CIA, that von Bolschwing became the protege and the operator for Gehlen when Gehlen went back to Germany. And, of course, in these hearings, there was a lot of material on the organization of Albert Hakim and Secord, and he tried to avoid it many times. And the publication of this material will be out probably next year or so, and then we can read it word by word. One of the things the newspapers covered and TV was the disclosure that Richard Secord's own firm, Stanford Technology, that's the one that he and Albert Hakim ran, and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel were part of that, and Theodore Shankly and Thomas Kleins. The hearings revealed that Stanford Technology Group got $400,000 to $500,000 just for their private firm. That was the nucleus of recruiting these other people from what was called a shell company set up to handle the Iranian arms funds. The shell company was Willard Zucker in Switzerland, who was the gentleman who set up the flight capital and the arrangements for Bernie Kornfield and Robert Vesco that I talked about. But now this is all public record. A lot of it is public record, the ledgers, and how funds come from Swiss banks for what are called loans that are never paid back, no interest on them, and they set up shell companies to do the work that is not supposed to be done by the government and is not visible from Congress or other officials, but a small clique inside of the National Security Council make the decisions and do have the capacity to run or overthrow any country that they want. Now, before I go on to the Iran hearings, it's not separate from it, and it's not obscure. I want to update an item in the news that has been of interest to me for this past year, all of 1986, starting in January 86, because many of you probably read that Advanced Genetic Sciences got permission to spray their all genetically altered live bacteria on strawberries and food products in California. Now, a year ago, January 85, not more than just a little bit over a year, one member of the Board of Supervisors attended a meeting with a handful of people from the Green Party, the environmentalists in Carmel, and he learned that this company that was obscure, this AGS, was going to spray for the first time in the world this bacteria in Monterey County. And what ensued was a meeting with the Board of Supervisors, and I've talked about that at length through the entire year about AGS, and I thought it was weird at the time that when we went to the meeting, they had no letterhead with board of members, directors of it, no noticeable list of persons behind the project. They were questioned about who put the money up to put the live bacteria into our county. And the three people representing them at the hearings just had ordinary sheet of paper, some were on pink paper, some on green, describing what they were going to do with their product called Ice Minus. But, of course, it took a lot of research to find out the money came from Sweden and Belgium and from corporations like Roman Haas, and that the attorney who set it up was from the office of Sullivan and Cromwell, Alan Dulles' office, the I.G. Farben offices in America, and, of course, I'm not going to update all of AGS, except that 1 year later, they got their way. It's a huge corporation, and they slipped in unnoticed. But once they got their way, every newspaper in the country all of a sudden noticed that AGS was spraying just this past week. Now, William Colby was director of the CIA after the Vietnam War, but in Vietnam, he worked on the Phoenix program. And on the Phoenix program there, it was a mass murder, just defoliating villages, killing people, admittedly 30 to 40 million and maybe many more. He worked with Robert McFarlane, Oliver North, General Richard Secord, Thomas Kleins, Theodore Shackley, and Thomas Polgar, who became CIA station chief in Saigon when Theodore Shackley left. And all of the characters involved in the Iran story worked, Iran-Contra story, that worked as that secret CIA government worked for William Colby over in Southeast Asia. And at the time I objected to the spraying, I knew that in our area, Monterey County, and many areas in California and Southwest, there are 100% Mexican farm workers. And I remembered a speech William Colby had given earlier at the Commonwealth Club in California and San Francisco, a group of very wealthy persons, mostly also members of the Bohemian Club. And I wrote to them for a transcript of what Colby said, but I found the quotation I wanted in the magazine Covert Action, January 1979. And this is what Colby said. He was talking also up at San Francisco, saying that the Russians weren't the biggest problem in the world. The Russians are a threat to our security. These are his words. We are very hopeful that the Mexican people will continue to work. Covert Action is saying we're hopeful the Mexican people will work and expose and neutralize the programs of the CIA and the likes of their station chiefs such as Thomas Polgar and Lawrence Sternfield. Now, this was written in 1979, and the same Polgar, Thomas Polgar, has been brought in by the House and Senate Committee to screen out all CIA agents and protect the CIA during the Iran-Contra affair, that secret government that is described in the headlines as being a private CIA. And this committee, these committees, are using Mr. Polgar to screen out the CIA members, and I believe a great deal in synchronicity. People who know me know that. And on the same page of Covert Action, January 79, they're referring to Thomas Polgar, being station chief now in Mexico, who worked with Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins in Saigon. And Covert Action is saying, we hope that you will beware of Polgar and Lawrence Sternfield, as well as the CIA and ITT officials who have been revealed who are harming your country and bribing it. And they used a quotation of Mr. Colby's about this great threat to America. He said the greatest threat to America, as I say, isn't the Soviet Union, but it is the Third World. And he said there's 60 million Mexicans today. There's going to be 120 million of them by the end of the century. They're becoming increasingly displeased at the gap between our affluence and their poverty. We can reinforce the Border Patrol. They don't have enough bullets to stop them all. And, of course, I remembered a memo from the DEA, not the DEA, the Environmental Protection Agency, going back to this time period in 1978 or 79, maybe a little earlier, and trying to devise a method by which to give cancer to Mexicans. And, of course, since that time, they were working on AGS at Fort Detrick, and I wasn't aware of it at that time. But there was this intent to give cancer to Mexicans, and people from AGS said that the spraying, the bacteria, could affect people with immune system. Now, given that background and these Contragate private teams, these Iran-Contra affair people coming out of the National Security Council and working with CIA directors such as William Casey and Colby, I just want to cite how much coverage the spraying of Ice Minus gave to the world this week. It didn't get that kind when it slipped into town with no notice of who they were or what they were. But just this past week, and I'll cite the papers and the dates to show that it did indeed become a major story. And they knew all along the possibilities of people who made this, and that's why they crept into town without notifying the health officials, the people who lived near the spring, and so forth. The Houston Post had an article April 25th, History is Made with the use of altered bacteria. And I'm not going into the details of these stories. I just want you to know that if history was made, why didn't they tell the people who live here? The front page of the New York Times, and it shows June Lindemann, who was one of the ladies who was there testifying and didn't identify, as they say, the board of directors. She's spraying, and if you look at her in this outfit, you realize that you are indeed in a very dangerous world, and they agreed to destroy and burn every crop after they tested it, and they also agreed they were testing how far it went in the wind, which is identical to the hydrogen bomb and the Marshall Islands, knowing the natives were going to get cancer for 3 and 4 generations. New York Times, April 25th, gene altered bacteria released outdoors in a historic experiment. Front page, New York Times, and then a long article continued inside about the wisdom and the safety and the debate it brought about. Another story from the Kansas City Times sent to me by listeners, World Watchers, genetically altered bacteria sprayed on field. And it got a long story once it went through. New York Times again, biogenetic field test, new era, new challenge for a nation. Frost Band's ultimate use may be as a regulatory guinea pig. So wait and see if it happens to other people. It will be a regulatory guinea pig. Then the front page of the Los Angeles Herald, and again, this same lady wearing this suit and armor, spraying her Frostbuster for the first time in the world, genetically altered genes. Miami Herald, April 25th, frost-fighting spray is given its first test. Washington Post, a large article, A4, gene-altered bacteria test in berry patch. Even Time Magazine, May the 11th, tubers, berries, and bugs. Scientists release man-made microbes into the environment. So once it was sprayed, it made a lot of coverage, got a lot of attention, but the safety of the product that they've sprayed, if you call live bacteria genetically altered a product and expect to make millions and millions about it, the safety, they said, we'll have see if it's okay in 5 months, by June, less than 5 months, 2 months. Well, the cancer in the Marshall Islands didn't start for a long time, although there were blisters and burns. In the same way with the testing the atomic bombs up in Utah and Nevada. It takes 10, sometimes 3, 10, 15 years when these massive cancers break out. So by June, they're going to tell you if it's safe. If nobody has died of cancer by June, then they're going to turn this into a multi-billion-dollar industry. And given the mindset of William Colby that there has to be literally some way to kill so many Mexicans and you don't have enough bullets to shoot them all, it would be very interesting to pursue more about this later. But these are the people working in the Iran-Contra affair. Each one of these agents that is being named continuously worked with Colby, and it's Colby's mindset of what to do with the Third World as they get concerned about the imbalance between what we have and what they have. Now, Sunday, going on to another subject that I can't avoid it, or you'll think I was remiss. It has to do with Gary Hart. Sunday evening on our public, National Public Radio, television, the McLaughlin Report was going on, this discussion of a bunch of nerds throwing the weekly events around. And they were saying, one of the people I was surprised was saying how much luck Ronald Reagan has. They said just when the Tower Report came out, the very week of the Tower Report, Jessica Hahn surfaced with the Jim Baker story, and this is a direct quotation, and took all the news away from the Tower Report and the flack that Reagan himself would get. They diverted it from the report. And then this person, it might be George Wills, who said, then this time, just when Major Secord testified this week before the Iran-Contra hearings, the Wilma Rice-Gary Hart story broke and monopolized the news for 4 days. It had all of the talk shows continuously. Most people in this country wouldn't even know who General Secord is and won't remember anything he said, the controversial things that were said, and the news was literally saturated when probably the most important witness, he and Albert Hakim, the two of them, would be one half of the team was testifying. And this person said the Rice Hart story broke the news and monopolized it for 4 days. And the time that Secord was testifying about Iran, people in Washington were looking the other way and interested about Gary Hart. So for 4 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and even the summary news on the weekends, all of this important testimony had been going on, and it was diverted by this time bomb of Gary Hart, who had known this woman for 2 months. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story, big letters, Hart kept the heat off the Republicans' troubles. The hearings are upstage. That was written by Larry Liebert. It was also mentioned on television. Now, the front page of the New York Times, May the 7th, had just three columns, one next to each other. The first one, wife joins Hart, pledging support. He concedes some mistakes were made, and he defends himself anew. Well, the mistake he made was bedding down with Donna Rice, a companion of Adnan Khashoggi, who had introduced Frank Sinatra to the contacts of Hart. Frank Sinatra was involved, Khashoggi was involved, and of course it brought Hart out of office very, very quickly. And more important than not having him run, because I don't really think the Republicans minded that much, and they knew he was a great womanizer, but they also knew the hearings would be coming up in the spring and early summer, and all of a sudden the story of this lady took all the news just like a groundswell of synchronicity. Every station and most of the stations like Capital Cities, ABC, CBS, Capital Cities is ABC is William, the late William Casey, and is literally controlled by the CIA, NBC by Henry Kissinger, and CBS, Kissinger advises them on the news too. There was a merger of NBC with General Electric, and of course all the announcers and talk shows went crazy, just diverting the whole subject of the whole past week to Gary Hart. Now, on the same page of the New York Times, on May the 7th, next to the Hart story, William Casey, ex-CIA head, is dead at age 74. And then it goes on to mention that about his brain tumor, and that he died less than 24 hours after the first witness in congressional hearings on the affair named him as having assisted in providing arms to Nicaraguan rebels. And, of course, William Casey had been threatened with blackmail by the same Khashoggi, who was a friend of Donna Rice. He and Mr. Furmark had given money to William Casey for arms to Iran. They weren't paid back. Khashoggi was very much a part of William Casey forcing Edwin Meese to come out and break the whole story. So Khashoggi was a part of the Donna Rice Hart story. Khashoggi was part of the Hakim, Paul Cutter, Hashemi connections to arms to Iran that got the president in so much trouble, and then those profits were sent down to Nicaragua. And then the third story on the same front page is Secord recounts being told Reagan knew of his work. And he's testifying, and so there's a column about him, and there was some coverage in the newspaper about Secord, but a great deal of it was about Casey and Hart, of course, this week. And Secord, General Secord and Admiral North, received arms from Israel working with Adnan Khashoggi, and he helped give money that, as I say, would be diverted to the Contras. So Secord was involved with Khashoggi, Casey was involved with Khashoggi, and Donna Rice was involved with Khashoggi. And what happened, the winner of all of this was Ronald Reagan, who could neutralize 4 days, at least for a while, a very important testimony. His CIA director is neutralized forever. As the parish priest said when he buried him, he can now go to the great CIA up there in the sky. You heard the reprimand he got, they got over the corpse. Now, the thing about Hart, he always wanted to be like John Kennedy, and he thought he could womanize like John Kennedy, but of course, you know, the times change. But there are similarities to the Kennedy case, not his style or his mind, but the way one got trapped and the other got blown away with a bullet. First of all, there are many articles on the mysterious funder for Gary Hart. Have you seen those stories about the lawyer who attached himself to him? There's a front page, New York Times, May the 6th. Hart associate, a top lawyer, well-connected. Did you see? The Wall Street Journal had a story. Lawyer Broadhurst is unlikely cohort in Hart's travels. Why is he unlikely? He was a companion to Gary Hart for a short time. He gave a lot of money to him. He accompanied him with another woman, not his wife. We haven't heard from his wife about this. He probably might do this frequently for setting politicians up. And it was his yacht they were on, and he's been identified with a lot of big business with companies that do heavy pollution. He's anti-environmentalist in the term that Gary Hart represented himself, and this attorney represents the state of Louisiana. And it's interesting, there's some very nice citizens living there, such as Gordon Novell in New Orleans and Carlos Marcello. And Lake Pontchartrain was a training place for the Bay of Pigs. It was a connection point when Lee Harvey Oswald was sent there, and Clay Shaw, both of those dead now, but they have many living friends in Louisiana, probably the two most active anti-Castro Cubans, the Somozans, the anti-Nicaraguans are in Louisiana and in Miami. So out of these two places, one comes the attorney and one comes the chick. And the attorney travels around and has the yacht. And as I say, represents the state of Louisiana. And you know a good hunk of that is organized crime and far-right extremists that would like to neutralize the Central American countries, just as William Colby would like to do, and keep them for the playground of the Americas. Now, this woman that he was with had about as much distinction as the Judith Exner that John Kennedy went with. She had the same qualifications of companions, such as Mr. Khashoggi. She was a so-called model at an agency. She also worked for a pharmaceutical firm. I wonder if it's related to I.G. Farben or Elmer Bobbs Warner Lambert. She was a freelance working for a pharmaceutical firm. And I think of the time of the Watergate hearings with poor President would-be Edmund Muskie getting LSD in his drink. And incidentally, it was Gary Hart working with McGovern that said Muskie deserved or should get the press treatment he got at the time. So what goes around comes around. There was a long article in the San Francisco Chronicle, maybe went over the wire services. Cox News Service poster reveals a little more of Donna, and she is photographed half with one breast coming out and one not. And she told the photographer she was concerned about the picture because she was seeing someone politically important, and the man who had the picture told the people at the Miami Sun, you know, about the King Studios where he had the picture. Rice made the statement to King on April the 2nd, and shortly afterwards, that two people took an overnight trip to the Bahamian Islands of Bimini. She made the statement, and they were aboard a yacht, a chartered yacht. And so she was talking about these things to her photographer friend in Miami, and as a matter of fact, Frank Sturgis and Mr. Martinez at the time of Watergate talked about using certain photography or photographic store as a front for their CIA dash activities, covert action, which was for the policy of overthrowing any candidate except Richard Nixon to be sure that he would be elected. Now, the photographer said Rice knew the shot would be used for a poster. She didn't realize it would be for sale. And Rice initially expressed a concern that the poster would affect her standing in the modeling community, but I suppose not in her pharmaceutical company. And then she remarked, again, like she was seeing some important political person and was concerned that it would create a problem or problems for that person. And the photographer said he wasn't politically oriented. I never heard of Gary Hart until Monday and so forth. But this man had her pictures, and she goes in and says, oh, you know, the one with my tit hanging out, I'm afraid about that one. Tit isn't one of those seven words you can't use. I understand, so I guess that's okay. And she's telling people about her liaison with a very important person in an area where it's predominantly anti-Castro Cuban. It's filled with the Freedom Fighters, the Somozans, and certainly the Miami Herald is made up of those kinds of people. So she was talking around about her photograph and the person that she was seeing. She's as if saying, get the picture out of the stock barrel if you don't have it on top of it now, because I'm seeing an important person. The San Jose Mercury also had a story about joining Adnan Khashoggi and dating Prince Albert of Monaco. And she was a beauty queen in South Carolina, at University of South Carolina, attended the Super Bowl out in Pasadena and met Hart in Colorado, and then restarted that friendship, said, don't you remember me later? Let's go on a yacht. That's about the way it happened. She said for a short time after college, she pursued her modeling career. She was a Phi Beta Kappa. She described a Fort Lauderdale newspaper that she committed sins. She attended a Billy Graham crusade in 1985, and she said, the lures of the world were pulling me away. I was drifting away from living for Jesus Christ. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I'm coming back to Jesus. So like Mark David Chapman, who heard rock music and allegedly liked the Beatles, and then here's Jesus Christ at a Laotian camp at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, where these same people, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, and the persons from the Middle East had associations at Fort Chaffee. He all of a sudden saw Christ and then takes his momentous trip around the world and does a lot of losing his traces or accumulating more traces, and then shoots John Lennon one evening. Well, in 1985, she's going to Christ. She is going back to the church, but in 1986, she's glad to knock out a presidential candidate. But the timing was the important thing. It was a time bomb waiting to happen, not necessarily to Hart alone, but to wipe out the news at a specific time. Now, we've seen two of these involved in covert actions that were helping President Reagan divert the discussion and analysis of him and his National Security Council and his agents. We'll see what else comes up and what more occurs similar to this. A friend of hers said, I gave her name and the incidents to the newspaper because I don't want any more candidates lying and deceiving the people. She also is a great actress, and the person in the Miami Herald said she's beautiful, adorable, and all-American. She's a good actress. So was Ronald Reagan an actor. So was Evita Peron an actress. So was Pope Karol Wojtyla, who became John Paul II. This lady, Donna Rice, had a quotation in the New York Times, May the 6th. She said, when asked if she wondered what Mr. Hart's wife, Lee, would think of her husband taking a cruise with an attractive woman 20 years older, she said, I feel it was none of my business. He's a grown man, and he knows what he is doing. Now, Gary Hart was on the Intelligence Committee when he was in Congress. He was with Frank Church. He heard these stories of covert actions. Didn't it matter to him, or didn't he investigate? When this mysterious attorney comes up with hundreds of thousands of dollars and takes him to these wonderful places and fills in the void of money he needs, doesn't it occur to him to ask the background on that man who's putting in the money or the woman that he's going to go to bed with? Of course it didn't occur to him. People study things academically, but they really are not intelligent when it comes to screening these things out. So he fell for the bait. He's responsible for his own fall. If I let people into my home or go out with people that are questionable or could hurt my research or could stop what I'm doing, it's my obligation to be very, very cautious. I can't stop someone coming in the door if they're not supposed to, but I don't have to invite them in. And many of you know I am very cautious. I know questions to ask. I ask them on the telephone. I meet a person outside the home, and it doesn't take me more than 30 minutes to figure out this isn't the kind of person I want to mingle with or know any further. Of course, the Soviet Union had an article that this activity, not his activity, but the way the media carried and carrying the morals of American political life to such an extent in the way they did it was really to weaken the Democrats. But I think the Soviet Union was wrong in this case. I think the people on McLaughlin Report and in the printed media in the newspapers were right that it diverted from Ronald Reagan's problems this week, and her story would have kept another 2 months if it had been something else important. But that was a perfect time with the kicking off of the hearings to stop talking about the hearings the first 4 days because they were historic, they were monumental, and they were very, very important. Read the articles about Hart's attorney. I'm not going to share all of it with you. Mr. Broadhurst and the retreat he took him to Smith Bagley's, that's the Reynolds Tobacco Home on Simon Islands. And read, that's New York Times, May the 6th. As I say, read the background of this man and the mysteries that even the writers of the newspapers find about him traveling with Hart. And it's a very interesting subject that is not going to end with Gary Hart, because I'm sure that there are a bevy of politicians betting down who are going to be exposed later. And I'll bet my last bottom dollar they're all going to be Democrats, and Democrats in a way deserve it because they let Tony Lasowitz of Watergate fame describe setting up houses with one-way mirrors and cameras and having women, you know, seduce men to blackmail, and they were planning yachts in Florida to blackmail politicians. With that, the Democrats weren't outraged and didn't ask for new laws stopping this, so you get what you deserve, and what goes around comes around. And Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan got away, will get away, and they both got away with all these other things that were so horrendous, but are historically documented as being part of their operations and never being reprimanded for it. This is Mae Brussel, and it's the first half of World Watchers. I'll take a one-minute break, go on to some more news related to the Iran-Contra affair, and a lot of pertinent things that are taking place right now.